Welcome to the Confluence Cast presented by Columbus Underground. We are a weekly Columbus-centric podcast focusing on the civics, lifestyle, entertainment, and people of our city. I'm your host, Tim Fulton. This week, there is often a complex interplay between preservation and progress. A year into his exploration, Columbus Underground reporter Jesse Bethay continues to sift through the story of how the removal of remains from what was once the North Market parking lot unfolded. From the contentious removal of centuries-old graves to the forensic analysis of unearthed remains, today's episode navigates the ethical, legal, and emotional complexities surrounding the issue. In the quest to honor the past while embracing the future, we examine what lies beneath the surface of urban development and confront the ghosts of history that still shape our city today. You can get more information on what we discussed today in the show notes for this episode at theconfluencecast.com. Enjoy the interview. Sitting down here with Jesse Bethay, Columbus Underground freelance journalist. Jesse, how are you?
I'm great.
Good. Last time we talked about the series of articles that you had done on the North Market graveyard, the graveyard that was discovered in basically the parking lot of the North Market, just north of downtown Columbus, just south of the Short North. There's been some development since then. Basically, I wanted to check in. I do also, at the beginning of this podcast, kind of want to give you a lot of credit for inspiring me, and I think our listeners a little bit, to think about Columbus in a slightly different way, to think of it as a place that maybe we haven't taken as much ownership over as we maybe should. So I wanted to give you that credit there.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel the same way about this story?
I think
because you are running it down. Like, yeah. Let's be clear.
I definitely think the same way.
Okay.
Let me put it like this.
Okay.
I see people sort of cheerleading Columbus, and I see people degrading Columbus, you know, and sort of back and forth all the time. And the place where they never seem to meet is the idea that Columbus has any sort of history. The people that degrade Columbus are sort of like, we have no culture, we have no history, mm-hmm. we didn't come from anywhere. It's, you know, this place is just sort of, and in a sort of subtler way, on the side of people cheerleading and always wanting the newest thing, they sort of do that without thinking, what are we losing?
Right.
When we chase after the newest thing.
And maybe I would frame their cheerleading sort of in the, we have this great opportunity to build.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, but building upon what,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which I think
metaphorically, this story is that, right? Yeah.
One great example of that, and this is far afield, and
yeah.
sort of, so feel free to cut it out, but there's the plaque at Coleman's Point,
okay.
On the Scioto River. And it has a picture of Michael Coleman, and it has his famous quote that the city that stays the same gets left behind. And it's beautiful. It's a great sentiment. But every time I think about it, or every time I walk by it, I'm like, I wonder if that's going to get torn down one day to build something else.
Okay.
You know, and that would be a, you know, in a way that sort of would be following his mantra.
His edict. Right.
But it also, you know, he too is a part of Columbus history. And how would we who remember that part of Columbus history feel if it was destroyed?
Right.
And in the same way, I think that erasing the North graveyard.
Yeah.
Which it is what's happening. I mean, it's already been mostly erased.
It by was what's paved there. Over to sure. start, right?
Yeah. So it's not, and that's another thing. It's not as if this development is erasing it. It's mm-hmm. already been erased.
Right. So let's step back a little bit
sure.
for those that have not, didn't hear the first podcast.
Yeah,
I invite you to do it. But what's the high level story here?
Okay. This is a speed run.
Okay.
In the early 1800s, right as Columbus was founded, a plot of land was picked to be the city cemetery. Every city needs one. You know,
yep.
people are always dying.
Yep.
So that's where they started burying people, and they kept burying people there until about the Civil War.
And to be clear, this is the location right behind where the North Market currently sits.
Yes.
Got it.
Just to give people some dimensions,
yeah.
would be like the land below Spruce, above Convention Center Drive,
mm-hmm.
and between Park Street and High Street.
Okay.
So it was right on High Street. It was this sort of trapezoidal shape.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite large.
There's a reason why Charbar in the basement is so creepy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was right perfectly there.
Yeah.
So about 1864, it was too full. It was decrepit. Tombstones were falling down. And so the city decided, we're not allowing people to be buried there anymore. A few years after that, they said, this is a really good
piece of land.
Yep.
Right.
And we're going to start selling off pieces of this to developers that want to build, you know, railroads. They want to build taverns, saloons, whatever.
And was it your first article named Come Get Your Dead?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so as part of this effort, they were like, obviously, we're not going to build these buildings on top of people. If you have it, and they would put articles in the newspapers,
mm-hmm.
that would say, if you have anyone buried in the North Graveyard, please come get your dead,
yeah.
more or less. Now, obviously, what that depended on was that people saw that in the newspaper.
Right.
Or
could read
in the 1870s.
Right.
And that they still lived here. Mm-hmm. And if none of those things were true, then you had a bunch of people still buried under North Graveyard that nobody knew they were there. And so they dug up all the people they could,
mm-hmm.
all the people they could find, and said, well, that's it. And so then the word was, the graveyard's cleared and we can build whatever we want.
And do you believe at that time, and forgive me, I don't remember this, do you believe at that time that they thought there's no more bodies here?
I think that from then on, mm-hmm. for the next 150 years, there was a lot of wishful thinking.
Okay.
I think that, you know, there are all of these stories from between that time and now saying, oh yeah, we were digging a telegraph line or a telephone line and we found a skull, or, you know, we were building this and we found some bones. But I think there was always the overarching wishful thinking was, well, we got most of it. There's going to be a few, but we got
these were one-offs. This was not a thing, right?
Because there was no real way to know until you did a comprehensive archaeological excavation,
right?
Which is what we just did.
And we did that kind of like, that wasn't the point of it, right? The point of it was, we're going to put this new tower behind the North Market,
mm-hmm.
Which, as we speak here on Leap Day 2024, they're laying the foundation. Like, they're done digging.
Yeah.
So fast forward at least a little bit in terms of your narrative. There was some obfuscating at that time when we talked about, like, well, who's in charge of this, and whose responsibility is this? There were tents that were covering up the site of remains,
mm-hmm.
in the parking lot. It did indeed delay the construction of the North Market Tower. But I think you found some additional things as well. Like, what, because I think originally the final resting place was meant to be Greenlawn Cemetery.
Yes.
Is that still true?
It is.
Okay.
But, and this is kind of where the wishful thinking of it all felt, you know, kind of collapsed.
Oh, okay.
Is Tara Rose Cassano, who's one of the scientists working for Lahana and Associates. She was one of the people responsible for excavating these.
Okay.
These remains. She actually said to city council, I think in July of last year, she said something to the effect of, we thought we were going to discover, you know, 200 mostly empty graves, and we discovered many multiples more.
So
hundreds of more.
Sorry. Let's dangling modifier there.
Yeah.
Hundreds of more graves, but empty.
It's been very hard for me to discern that.
Okay.
I've heard.
Sorry. I'm going to ask for another clarifying question.
No, that's fine.
There are a lot of graves.
There are a lot of graves.
More graves than anyone thought.
More. Yes. There are.
Remains were found.
Yes. And more remains than anyone thought would still be there.
And do we have a concept of how many people, maybe, because you showed me a map even at one point that was like, well, that looks like a grave, but see how it's constructed? That means that that's a site of graves,
mm-hmm.
plural.
And some of the graves are on top of each other.
Right, exactly. That's
so
what I mean.
Yeah, there's cross-cutting graves as well.
Okay.
So it is very hard to pin down a specific number.
Okay.
The last time I talked to Tara Rose, she sort of said, you know, if I tell you a number now, it could be different tomorrow.
Because
they're taking a jumble of bones, more or less, and they're sorting out into individual people that those bones belong to.
Because there's not going to be three femurs.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And that process takes time. It could take years.
Okay.
So I've heard estimates in the high 900s. But I'm not, it's very fluid of individuals
remains.
Yes. Of individual people, the remains are even, you know,
and so,
sorry, I know
that's a bit of a lot to take. That's a lot to take in. But translating that back maybe a little bit,
sure.
It's also entirely possible. Hey, you came and got the remains for your family.
Mm-hmm.
And that excavation may not have been as thorough and proper as I think everyone would hope
right.
would happen.
I would say that's extremely likely.
Okay.
In many cases.
Okay.
And so I think it's when all is said and done and all the remains are reburied at Greenlawn, very good chance there'll be people buried in multiple different spots.
Got it.
At Greenlawn.
Okay.
Because of what you just described, that they did such a slapdash job in the 1800s because they didn't have...
Well, and there may even be people in Greenlawn that are in Greenlawn that another quote-unquote part of them is now about to be interred.
That's exactly... Yeah.
Okay.
So
let's... go ahead.
Well, just to answer your original question, because
they
will be buried at Greenlawn... But there was a specific section in Greenlawn that was established in the 1800s for people who were being moved out of North Graveyard.
Okay.
They found...
Sorry, and this conversation is going to be like this.
That's okay.
Let's say remains were not gathered by family or next of kin, however you want to refer to them.
Sure.
The city, it was believed that there was an attempt to migrate those bodies, even if they were unclaimed.
Yes.
Okay.
But it depended entirely on, because a lot of the gravestones were missing by that time, or not, it was not well taken care of.
Or documented, apparently.
Yeah. It was, yeah. And it depended entirely on sort of institutional memory of the people of the caretakers at the graveyard to remember where people were buried.
Okay. So back to Greenlawn. Sorry, there was a plot.
There was a plot specifically designated, and that is where, back in the early 2000s, they did an excavation along Spruce Street, and that's where those remains were buried.
Okay.
That's sort of the section for people who were buried in North Graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
They found, in this last round of excavations in 2023, they found too many bones.
Okay.
And so they've actually chosen a new plot at Greenlawn, that will be where these folks go.
Okay.
And so that's going to, I don't know where the plans sit now. Last time I talked to Randy Rogers, who is in charge of the Greenlawn Cemetery Association.
Okay.
He was saying they were going to build a new memorial there for these people, because obviously we're not going to be able to identify most of them.
Right.
It's extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
And we, there's,
so what, talk to me about how, cause I, it's fascinating to me that you're so ingrained in this one very feel specific, but speaks to so many different things.
Yeah.
Right?
And sometimes, and this is why I'm depending on you, because I'm in the weeds on this. So
yeah. Well, yeah. And that's why I'm stopping you. Right.
Sure, yeah,
because you are so deep in a story like this that it's like, oh yeah. I got to tell you about this part of it.
Right.
Like, it's like telling somebody like, you know, why'd that marriage end or why'd you break up? It's like, well, we had to fight about this. That seems pretty dumb.
Sometimes,
yeah. But if you consider the context,
sometimes it's like,
right,
this is a dream I had last night.
You yes. know? It's, and there's a lot to it. So when remains are discovered, a collection of remains, which I would hope is a fairly rare occurrence, there is a proper way to inter them, bury them. You don't just put them all into one thing if you can avoid it. You have to make a reasonable effort to sort of separate them as a remains.
Yes.
What have you learned about that? Like, how are they handling that?
So what I was told by Mary Ellen O'Shaughnessy, who is sort of taken on the funerary aspects of all of this.
Okay.
Her intention is to, once they have done all the analysis, and again, this is going to be a years long process for them to do the osteological analysis of bones.
Osteo means bones.
Right. And, and have them separated into individuals and saying like, these are all the bones that we can find of this individual.
Right.
Some of that's going to be easier because a lot of them were articulated. They were fully sort of skeletons. So those are going to be easier to separate into individuals. Once they're separated out, they're each going to be put into their own individual boxes, not a full casket, but a small box.
Yeah.
Those boxes are going to fit into human sized caskets.
Okay.
And then they're going to be buried in a vault.
Okay.
And then the vault is going to be under the ground in Greenlawn.
Okay.
So it's sort of like, it's a bit of a Tetris situation. They're going to be putting boxes within boxes.
Okay. But but respectfully stored is really the way to sort of think about it.
Right. And they're going to be separated. And one of the reasons is it's...
I have all due respect for human remains, right? But it sounds a little bit like almost a filing system of like, hey, we know that this is this, and so we're going to put it in this enclosed thing, which may then be, you know, and then the next one we discovered is right next to it, and it's got its number or catalog associated reference to it.
It does feel clinical, but there's a way of looking at it and saying like, that's almost the best you can do.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to identify.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason they're going to be sent to Greenlawn is because the remains previously that were moved out of North Graveyard ended up there.
Right.
So presumably they would be buried in the same cemetery as their friends and family.
Or at least folks who were around at the same time.
Right. Contemporaries.
Right.
Which is, you know, again, as close as you can get without having any identification.
And from an archaeological standpoint, we should say that it was not a bulldozer that like went through and got all these remains. As soon as they found remains, actual construction and like digging stopped, and there were are they archaeologists? Is that what you would call them?
Yes. So they are, this is an interesting distinction.
Okay.
But they are what's called CRM archaeologists. That's cultural resources management.
Okay.
So they are archaeological contractors that people hire when they are going to be operating in a location that they know has, you know, human remains or archaeological, you know, it'd be the same as if they were looking at a site that was known to be like a native site.
Got it. Okay.
Now, it wasn't so much like we just start digging and stop if we hit bones, because they were aware. I mean, everyone knew this spot was...
This is going to... When we do this...
Yeah.
And everybody... Well, and what was interesting to me at the time is I felt like I knew that. Mm-hmm. Like, and then when the story came out and everybody was like, what the fuck? And I was like, we knew that. Like, we knew... But in hindsight, what you realize is like, yeah, we knew it, but we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, and it's funny that like I've done 11 of these stories and the comments are always sort of like, what?
Yeah. Like, right.
Okay. I'm happy you're learning this, but
yeah,
I don't know what else we need to tell you.
Yeah.
So I think that, I think that's a symptom of this sort of thing we have about Columbus of like, there wasn't a Columbus before 1989. What are you talking about? How could there be a graveyard under North Market? You
know? Right. City Center was our founding.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I can understand why it's such a surprise. I had a really great conversation with Bucky Cutright.
He's
the person who runs the ghost tours.
Yeah.
And he was saying like, yeah, you know, it's annoying, but it's good for business because I'm always surprising people.
Fair.
I'm like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. So fast forward a little bit. And we've covered it was an archaeological dig. They did this in a proper way when remains were discovered. And now they're going through the process of basically separating out the remains, which may be a very long process.
And not just separating, but they're going to try and determine age.
Okay.
Of, you know, how old.
Yeah.
Because I don't mean, I mean both age of the person when they died and also how old the bones are.
So both those factors.
They're trying to determine gender where they can. They're trying to determine ethnicity where they can.
Okay.
Determine race where they can. And then also determine pathologies. So if there are any obvious injuries that you can look at and be like, well, this person has
a broken
axe-shaped hole in their skull. So I think I know how they died, you know, and so that sort of thing, trying to determine how the people died to the extent that they can. Basically, any information they can glean from the bones and the, you know, if there was any clothing or artifacts they were buried with.
Okay.
They didn't get a lot of that, but there are some things they discovered artifact-wise that might help give an idea of how old they are, where they came from, you know, if it's like, hey, this button was only made in Germany or whatever.
Okay.
Or this button
and only made at a certain time.
Exactly.
Right.
Or this button is, you know, expensive, you know, this must've been a wealthy person, you know, that sort of thing. And the same with like, you know, if their teeth are worn down, that might give you an idea of their economic status.
And so will there be, what would be done with that? Right. Is that the kind of thing that like someone like you as a journalist would like, write the third of your book about like, here's the people that were there.
Yeah. That would be compiled into a report.
Okay.
That would be given to, it would be a public report.
Right.
It would be, one imagines, quite lengthy because they found a lot of people and a lot of things.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a long time for them to write it. So,
okay.
I'm
hopefully the book comes out first. We had been talking a little bit about sort of the folks who are doing that work has changed over time.
Yeah.
Is that, before we get too far into it, should we read anything into that, or is that just sort of administrative state people? This person started the job and this person finished it. And so
I mean,
set that aside, or why did that happen?
That stuff happens. I've heard a lot of different reasons for why the osteological analysis leadership has sort of shifted.
Okay.
And kind of different reasons from different sources. So yeah. I don't really want to speculate too much on that.
Of course.
But I think in general, there's a striving for efficiency, for accuracy, obviously. But this is part of, you know, this is a job. Lahana and Associates are doing a job for their client, which is Rockbridge, the company that's building the Merchant Tower. And so they're trying to do a good job, but also a speedy job,
you know,
within reason. They're so I think that
well, does that study doesn't sort of hold up? Well, sorry, now that I say that, I know why, right? It costs more.
Yeah.
Okay.
It certainly does.
So that has sort of changed hands a little bit.
Sure.
But I guess what I'm trying to ask is that even important to talk about? Because we have another kind of juicy thing that you uncovered.
it's not
that's fine.
No, it's not unimportant. It's just, it's still very much in the infancy.
Okay.
You know, I think it's just going to take a long time
to
do this. Even when I say trying to do it speedily, that's a relative term, you know, like you could send all of them to like a DNA lab to see what DNA you can extract. And we'll talk about that later when we talk about cholera, but that costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. And so maybe you decide maybe it's worth it to some, you know, to do it for a sampling of the bones, but not all of them.
Right.
And in fact, it might be that they do a sampling of the bones to do the gender, the race, and the ethnicity, again, picking the most articulated ones, the ones that you have the most remains for, and saying, okay, let's just focus on these.
And is that the smart way to do it? Because it feels like it's sampling, right? It's like polling.
Sure.
Like intelligent people will know we take a census, which is literally we're going to do every single thing. Mm-hmm. And with the basically amount of things they need to process, frankly, I don't believe there's any finite time we need to do it. But like, yeah, maybe we do a sampling, and this is, I think, what I'm advocating for. Do a sampling, get a good idea of what we're looking at and what, you know, do an Occam's razor, like, oh, these are horses and not zebras. Mm-hmm. And then continue the work of categorizing these people and, you know.
So the typical way of doing it, I believe the typical way of doing it is doing the sampling based on the remains that you have a fuller picture of.
Okay.
They're definitely going to photograph and catalog all of the remains they discovered.
Okay.
But like you were saying, if you just have a femur that doesn't belong to any other skeleton and you're like, well, this is clearly represents one individual.
Right.
We just don't have the rest of them. There's really not more information you can get from that other than this is a femur and maybe it has an injury or something.
Right. But,
and we can maybe figure out how old it is. But comparing that to, we also have this articulated skeleton, or we have, you know, however many they have,
right,
that are fully articulated, you're going to be like, let's focus on those because we can get so much data out of that.
And there's
that.
So much more information. Right. Right. So what other, you would reference other testing that they're doing?
Well, one thing I'll say is that they are, Wahana and Associates, at least when they were excavating, seem to be more thorough than they necessarily needed to be. And in particular, one of the ways is doing the what's called photogrammetry.
Okay.
That's basically they took, you know, several dozen different photographs of each grave.
Okay.
And from those photographs, build a high resolution 3D model.
Okay.
Of what was in there. They did that for every single grave, which is unusual.
Okay.
Usually you wouldn't do that. And usually you wouldn't do it for empty graves, but they did it for the empty ones too. If they found a grave, they were like, this was clearly a grave, but they dug down 6 feet and there was nothing there. No remains, no artifacts, no anything. They still did the photogrammetry of the empty grave so that they had that data as well. So they were very thorough in that regard.
Okay.
And so that is also going to be a very fascinating part of the report when it comes out.
Because that will tell us both where the grave sites were, but also I imagine where they may have, what did you refer to it when one grave was
cross-cutting?
Like, yeah, cross-cutting when they had the graves. Like that will show that.
And this is me speculating, but okay, I imagine it will also show a very clear dichotomy between articulated skeletons, which all of which were buried with evidence, according to Lahana Associates. Every articulated skeleton was buried with evidence of a previous coffin. So they were clearly, they were buried in a container of some sort. So it'll show a clear dichotomy between those and the sort of
jumbles of bones. And, oh, look, there's no coffin here.
Yeah. Yeah. Which could mean, it doesn't necessarily mean they were buried without one, but it could mean, so this is clearly evidence of there was a grave here. There was a coffin here. There was a articulated skeleton. The coffin was exhumed. The skeleton was moved. But
maybe they didn't do a good job.
Yeah, but all these bones were left behind.
And also probably, but also, I don't know enough about these things, but is also possibly evidence that like this was the poor side of the graveyard.
Sure.
This is where the not, maybe they were coffins, but they're not as nice.
And historically we know that that was the case, that there was a potter's field situation because it was the city cemetery. This is where, if you died in Columbus between 1813 and 1864, that's where you were buried.
Yeah. And
especially if you couldn't afford to be buried elsewhere.
Additionally, is it evidence that like maybe this area was less disturbed than another in the development that happened after that, when that land started being developed?
Well, I think the premise is that all of the, because they only dug under the parking lot, and the parking lot area has been undisturbed, you know, at least under the ground. Like there was never they did find foundations of like the previous North Market.
Okay.
And the Quonset hut.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, compared to the rest of that area, this sort of square where the parking lot was fairly undisturbed under the soil. And so again, relatively.
Right.
And so I think no matter what the expectation is, there wouldn't have been very much disturbance.
What other testing in addition to?
So one of the things they did was they did soil samples. They were looking for a number of things, but one of the things I know they were looking for specifically is I had a great conversation with an Italian archaeologist named Giuseppe Vercellotti.
Okay.
And he was an advisor early on the excavations as doing the photogrammetry.
Okay.
Because he did very similar work at a place called the Harrison Township Cholera Cemetery down in Lockbourne.
Okay.
Which is contemporary with North Market. So the people that were buried there roughly around the same time as the people buried at North Graveyard.
Okay.
But his specialty is bioarchaeology, and specifically chasing cholera cemeteries. He studied cholera cemeteries in the U.S. He studied them in Italy.
Okay.
And he did these soil samples at Harrison Township, and Tara Rose Cassano, who I mentioned earlier, was working there as well.
Okay.
And so when she was hired, you know, there's a lot of overlap between these two, partially just because there's not that many archaeologists in central Ohio.
Okay.
But there's a lot of overlap between these two projects. And so they continued this system of doing soil samples. The process would have been to do samples at the head of a grave.
Okay.
The sort of stomach area, groin area. And then the feet.
Okay.
The reason to do it at the feet is more of a control because you'd not expect any cholera DNA there.
Okay.
But you would expect it expelling from the orifices of a person recently deceased. And so, yeah, the point of that is to try and identify cholera DNA because we know that it was very prevalent around that time. We know historically that people who died of cholera in Columbus during the two major cholera pandemics, that was 1833 and 1849.
Okay.
A lot of those people would have been buried in North Graveyard.
Okay.
The problem...
Is knowing that simply, oh, we know how this person died, or is it additional is it that about that individual person, or is it more for the historical record of, oh, more people died of cholera than we were aware of in Columbus? Or is there some significant we can identify this strain that happened in 1833? Is it for modern use and purposes?
So there's a couple of reasons why that would be significant. One of them would be, you know, if this is unlikely, but if we were like, oh, you know, this person died of cholera, historically we know that, and so maybe we can identify them based on that, but that's crazy unlikely. The second reason is for the historical record to establish, to get an idea of how people with cholera were treated after they were deceased in the U.S.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, it's interesting because there's a lot of myths about cholera epidemics, a lot of stories about like mass graves and people being tossed into pits and forgotten about. And Dr. Vercellotti said a lot of that is sort of false. It was, you know, he sort of compared it to a mass grave makes sense in a situation like a genocide,
right,
where the people doing the burying hate the people being buried.
Right.
But in a pandemic situation, you're being buried by your loved ones.
There's still an acknowledgement.
Right. So, and he said that that did happen sometimes in European countries where the scale of death was just so much. That those cholera cemeteries...
There was not an option.
Yeah. Right. Those cholera cemeteries look very different from the ones he's studied in the U.S.
Got it.
The third significant thing is if they found cholera DNA at North Graveyard, that would be the first time anyone's ever found cholera DNA in a gravesite.
What?
They've never been able to find it, even in graves that they know are cholera graves.
Okay. So we're looking for something we've been in the past trying to find.
Yes.
Got it.
Dr. Vercellotti says he did, you know, these samples at Harrison Township, where, again, he knows these were people who died of cholera and were buried. He found DNA of other pathogens, just general human DNA, which, of course, they could easily find from North Graveyard as well. But he never found cholera.
Isn't that a theory that you would be able to? If he's never found it.
Yeah.
Right. It is a theory that you would be able to find it.
Theoretically, you should be able to find it.
But if he did find it...
If he did find it, that would be the first time...
We're putting Columbus on the map.
His theory is that cholera being... I don't know how much you know about cholera.
Not a lot.
I unfortunately had to read a lot about it to write that story. But it just flushes out your system.
Man. Okay.
That's how
it's bad. It's bad, and two, it's gross.
Yeah.
Like, it's bad, gross disease.
You die of diarrhea, essentially.
Okay.
From dehydration due to uncontrollable diarrhea.
Okay.
And so his theory is if a person is dying that way, mm-hmm. they're flushing all of basically everything out of their system, and there's no cholera left when they're buried.
Hmm.
So he was saying,
or even maybe the embalming or internment process, like it would just wouldn't be there.
Right, because you would expect that one of the things, well, one, your family members wouldn't bury you with soiled clothing, for right. example. Two, your family members may very well clean you before, right. which obviously...
You would want, right.
Yeah, but would possibly spread the
disease, the
bacteria.
Right.
So that okay. is also dangerous. But there's all sorts of reasons why they wouldn't find it. But if they found it, that'd be pretty exciting in yeah. a way, you know, from a bioarchaeological point of view.
And so the testing aside, mm-hmm. As you've continued to sort of research this, I think that you've also done a good job of taking a higher level view that is not only, okay, this happened, how was it addressed, but also sort of saying, like, how did the people that we entrust with handling these things address it? You actually did a FOIA request both with the city of Columbus mm-hmm. and with the state agency that's empowered to address these. What's the agency?
The State Historic Preservation Office. Yes.
State Historic Preservation Office. Both of them responded to your request.
In slightly different ways, yes.
Tell us about that first, because I think it's interesting.
So I sent a FOIA request to the city of Columbus, mm-hmm. and they responded pretty well and pretty quickly. Matt Lorenz in particular, I've interviewed him and have worked with him mm-hmm. you know, a couple of times on this story, and he sort of compiled all the emails that he had available during the process, specifically of the 2022 excavations, because that okay. was what the city was involved in.
Okay.
They didn't really have much involvement with the big excavations in 23.
Okay.
But he sent sort of a folder full of stuff that I could look through. And then I sent a similar request to SHPO, to the State Historic Preservation Office, and got a different response.
Okay.
I was told that SHPO is underneath the Ohio History Connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so they told me they are technically a nonprofit and not a state agency, even though...
Which is sort of true. I mean, they are an independent organization that is funded by the state.
Yeah. And they're the SHPO, you know, State Historic Preservation Officer is appointed by the governor. So
okay.
There's definitely some... It's more of a gray area than I think.
Yes, but they did. I think what they did is they said, "Here are the emails. By the way, we don't have to give these to
it
you."
It was yeah. That right. was the gist of it. It okay. was they said, you know, we want to be helpful.
Yeah,
here's everything we have, but we also don't have to give this to you.
And so, what did you find there?
I found a really good, candid look at sort of the interactions between each of the different, I would say, entities, because mm-hmm. it's not just agencies, it's, you know, private companies, contractors,
yeah,
you know, all the different entities involved in this, sending emails back and forth, just trying to get on the same page for years
okay.
In advance of the beginning of excavations in 2022. You know,
and did you ask for everything about the, like, the merchant building in general, or was it like, hey, anything of just about the excavation?
Yeah, I specifically, because I also knew that, like, any interactions that like Lahan and Associates had with Rockbridge, like I don't have access to those. They're public or they're private companies. They
right.
don't have any responsibility to give that to the
right.
media. But anything that involved the city or state
mm-hmm.
to an extent, mm-hmm. you know, is more public and so that's what I had access to. So I was sort of looking at it from the perspective of Matt Lorenz and from Krista Horrocks. And from those two perspectives, I really got an idea of sort of like who was talking to each other, who
okay.
was not talking to each other, and who like, and kind of what the pitfalls were
okay.
here and there. One incident in particular, like right after they started excavations in 2022,
mm-hmm.
The city had AEP out there on Park Street doing complete, like, it wasn't unrelated in the sense that it was...
They were doing utility work.
Right,
though.
They were
right.
doing utility work, and it was for the merchant building, but apparently nobody really thought that they had to have that as part of the calculus, because
okay.
the story that I got from the emails that of Krista Horrocks
yeah.
is that they were out there and they started their work, and some of the guys from Lahana Associates came over to them and said, "Hey, what are you doing? Do you know about the graveyard?
Do you know there's bodies there?"
Right, and the and the contractors are saying, "This is a cemetery. We should probably stop and you know, see what's going." And so Krista Horrocks is learning this and saying, like, "This is bad. This is someone who dropped the ball here. You know, we need to." And so you get the sense that Shippo determined that they had no authority to oversee any of this because it didn't trigger any of the laws that they are concerned with.
Okay. So it's a city issue.
It's complicated.
Okay.
There are three major. You can cut some of this out if it gets too.
I'm interested. Okay. Well,
so there's three major laws: two state, one federal. The federal law is Section 106 of the National Historic
Preservation Act.
Yes, that's. Yeah. And that's that really stresses any federal agency doing anything that might impact a cemetery has to be coordinating with the state SHPO. Okay. Every state has a SHPO.
Got it. Which makes it all the more a publicly reportable entity.
One would think, yes.
But yeah, you can say no to my FOIA request.
Sure. SHPO determined that didn't count or didn't apply here because no federal agency was involved.
Okay. So box checked. Right. Not our problem. Two state laws.
Yeah. Ohio Revised Code 149. Something. I can't quite
Good
remember.
Good job, though.
I think it's 149.07.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll check you on that. I'll fact check the end of this episode.
So it's basically the same thing except with state agencies. Any state entity that's doing anything that might impact a cemetery has to work with SHPO.
And guess what? These are private companies that are building on private land.
With $34 million of state tax credits, but yes.
Okay, but so...
But that, yes, that still doesn't count.
Oh, I point you to the Supreme Court saying, hey, if you're not giving them money, you're not giving them money.
Sure.
If you're not taking money from them,
that's not the
you
same.
Are not giving them money.
So
state credits, you're not giving them money.
No,
I'm just
count.
Saying the Supreme Court settled it. Yeah. So that's box number two.
Yeah, so they're good.
Okay, what's box three?
I'm going to forget this one.
The code number. Not important.
I think it's 759.
Okay.
So this Ohio Revised Code number 7-something. It's an interesting one because it says that a municipality can sell land that was previously a cemetery but is now abandoned.
Okay.
North Market or North Graveyard.
Perfect. Yep.
Fits. But... the buyer of that land cannot take possession of it
without
removing all of the graves.
Okay.
And it has this interesting language where it says you have to re-erect any monuments or tombstones found at that location at the location of reburial.
Which one would, in this case, would basically say, hey, they're going to Greenlawn and that's what we did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put a pin in that, though.
Okay.
Under that law...
That wasn't city land at that point, was it?
It was because it belonged to North Market.
Well, it belongs to the city, not the North Market, like Development Corporation or whatever it is.
Yeah, but that's still a city entity.
Okay.
You know, legally.
Okay.
So, that law, that Ohio state law, does not say anything about SHPO's involvement. And because of that, SHPO's... There are these emails from Lahana Associates and from Rockbridge to Krista Horrocks asking, hey, are we...
Can you sign off on this?
Right. Are we okay? Are we doing the right thing
here? Okay, because that's what you as a developer, like your reading of the law, what authority can basically vouch that we did this the right way? Here's our plan.
Yeah.
And then what did SHPO say?
She had to say... You know, I can give you recommendations about what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing, but we don't have any jurisdiction over this. So I can't tell you if you're following the law or not, basically.
Did they point to a jurisdictional authority?
As close as they did. They said under this revised code, we don't have any authority. We don't have any jurisdiction over that law.
Who does? The municipality?
Yes. So
okay.
We think.
Is that a yes or is that a?
It's a. I don't know.
Okay.
And this is sort of the question I'm working with now. This is, we're up to the limits of my knowledge about how any of this went down.
Okay.
Because the only definitive thing that's in those emails is somebody from Rockbridge said, we are in dialogue with the city about this question.
Sorry, I'm remembering a very minor point of this. The city didn't sell the land. Right? The city is allowing them to build on the land.
So that's an intricacy that I may not be.
Let's look into that, and okay, I might be wrong. And this again will be in the fact check. But sure. If, because what you said, at least what I heard, is the city can sell land. There is no law that I imagine posited a situation where there should be one, because this happens all the time, where the city is like, this is actually still ours. The reason why I believe that is because I know there was disagreement about what happens to the parking fees for the parking garage that's associated with the Merchant Tower.
Okay, so
then, that is still theirs.
Then I would be interested in the language of the law then about whether it says sell or whether it says
other word. We'll look at it, yeah.
But basically, this was the question they were asking.
Okay.
Are we doing everything right under this specific law?
They went to SHPO. SHPO said, here's recommendations, but I can't sign off on it.
Yeah. So then they went to the city. And as far as I don't know who they talked to with the city.
Okay.
Clearly somebody said, you're good because they're moving forward.
Yeah. Right.
But I don't know who that person was, and I don't know how they came to a decision.
Well, I imagine that the development company is large enough to have lawyers that would say, hey, you checked every box you could.
Yeah.
Even if nobody's telling you no, even if nobody's saying yes, if they're all not telling you no, then you're okay.
Right.
Right.
And it kind of came up a few times because remember earlier I said about the monuments and the tombstones?
Okay.
So at one point on Spruce Street, Lahana and Associates did discover two footstones.
Okay.
Footstones traditionally would not have the name of the person in the grave that they are marking.
Okay.
That's important to remember. Usually, if they had any indication or inscription, it would just be the initials of the person.
Okay.
So there's no way of knowing who these footstones belong to.
Mm-hmm.
So Lahan and Associates, when they contacted SHPO, they were saying, hey, and again, they were going through the process they were supposed to be going through.
They thought they were supposed to be going through.
Right. They were saying, hey, we found these. Our plan is to rebury them, not re-erect them the way the law says we should be doing, because we don't know who these footstones belong to. So we don't have when we rebury this at Greenlawn, we don't have a individual we can re-erect
them associate them with. Okay.
So we consider them artifacts that we should be reburying. But they're giving this to SHPO as like a, hey,
you tell us.
Yeah. We don't, okay. We think we're doing the right thing, but out of an abundance of caution, and the answer again is, we don't have jurisdiction over that. We can't tell you what to do.
I thought you were going to go down a route of like state law defines monuments this way.
Right. No, I don't. So that's another question.
But why is that? Sorry, I didn't hear in your original telling that the monuments had anything to do with the remains.
They don't. Well, so these monuments were discovered at a grave location.
Right.
But it's one of those cross-cutting graves.
Okay.
So it's not clear.
But yeah, it's okay. It's an interesting legal thing to think about, right?
But I think what it shows, though, is that the archaeologists were doing everything they could to keep everything within the bounds of the law.
Right.
But there's just so many people, like, this is just...
Well, and to an extent going above and beyond, right?
Yeah.
The documentation that they're doing, the testing that they're doing, like, they're doing it right as far as we can tell.
Yeah.
While folks, by and large, may not have been as informed as they should have been about... Here's what's going to happen when we do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, but the problem that everyone involved in this keeps running into is that it's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an absolute mess. It's been a mess for 150 years.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think mostly people are trying to do the right thing. As much as that is a bit of a corporate sort of PR statement.
Right.
but it's hard to do the right thing when something is this messy.
Yeah. You know? True. Jesse, thanks for your time.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I feel like we've,
gone
well over.
Not at all.
Thank you for listening to the Confluence Cast presented by Columbus Underground. Again, you can get more information on what we discussed today in the show notes for this episode at theconfluencecast.com. Please rate, subscribe, share this episode of the Confluence Cast with your friends, family, contacts, enemies, your favorite archaeologist. If you're interested in sponsoring the Confluence Cast, get in touch with us. We can be reached by email at info@theconfluencecast.com. Our theme music was composed by Benji Robinson. Our producer is Philip Cogley. I'm your host, Tim Fulton. Have a great week.